Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome back to the Science and Religion Podcast.
Absolutely. Welcome back.
Thank you for joining us yet again. As you can tell probably from the title, today we're going to be talking about the origin of the world.
Yes, absolutely. Whoa. We are.
Yeah.
And speaking of origins, our very own host, Colin Turpin, began his life 24 years ago today.
That's right. Today is my birthday. Is his birthday.
So great, yep. Great time to talk about origins.
Right. Yes. Hopefully we'll find out the Earth maybe is a little bit older than 24 years.
I don't know, man. There's a lot of crazy theories out there about the way we perceive. Who knows? We could have been created yesterday with implanted memories.
You know, let's not talk about that.
All right, good call. Good call.
Okay, so we wanted to spend a little bit of time just reiterating our mission statement for the podcast. If this is your first time joining us, welcome. We have 3 episodes ago that you can go watch to kind of get a setup. We are starting today talking about specific topics. So today we're going to spend the entire time going over origin of the world. And so our goal, like we've said many, many times before, is not to say this is the right answer, this is what you should believe. Yep. Yep. We are here to bring up the conversation topics, maybe to get you guys thinking, to get other conversations started, and that would make me a very happy person if that could happen.
Oh, absolutely. And especially if you told us.
Yes.
That'd be even better.
Yeah, please let us know. So where are we starting, Seth?
Where are we starting? It's a great question to ask when we're talking about origins. I think what I would like to do, we're going to start with perceptions of the universe, of how the universe began before the Big Bang. And now that's kind of a funny way to phrase it, because the huge belief about the world, about the universe before kind of hints of the Big Bang started appearing, was that the universe was eternal. The universe had always existed and it was always going to continue to exist. And this was due to really 2 big principles that kind of classical mechanics had determined. Scientists believed the universe worked according to Newton's laws of thermodynamics. Now, if you don't remember what they are, if you can't think back to high school or you're not even familiar with them, that's okay. I always get them mixed up.
Pop quiz,
yeah. so the big law of thermodynamics that scientists pointed to and said, aha, look, this is why the universe is eternal, was Newton's first law, and it goes by the name of the principle of the conservation of energy. Basically, the idea that energy can neither be created nor destroyed. Mm-hmm. Well, when they found out that by Einstein's famous equation that, E equals mc squared.
That's right.
Essentially saying energy is a form of matter. Well, they pointed to that, famous scientists pointed to that and said, look, energy can't be created nor destroyed. Therefore, the universe has always existed.
Right.
And this is our proof for it. And that was all well and good. But things started changing. There were 3 really big discoveries in the early 1910s, 1920s that really began to call into question the idea of an eternal universe. And I want to kind of touch on those real quickly and then talk about the significance of those discoveries and how that changed the perspective of both scientists who believed in a god and scientists who did not. So let's talk about those real quick. The first big discovery that scientists made that kind of pointed to this idea that there was a beginning. There's the guy's name. He's got a great name, so I gotta give him a shout out. His name was, you ready for this? Vesto Melvin Slipher.
Wow.
He was an American too.
Vesto
Melvin Slipher. In 1914, he basically observed that galaxies were receding from our observation point of observation. This was a really interesting idea. They didn't know why the galaxies were receding. Scientists thought that everything was kind of static, unchanging, and that these galaxies were just kind of there. Well, when they found out that there it was receding, that caused a lot of controversy. This was eventually proved that the galaxies were in fact receding. This led to another discovery that pointed to the fact that not only were the galaxies receding, but the farther they were away from the center, the faster they were going. So there's this idea of expansion. If you think of a balloon expanding, the outsides of the balloon are expanding quicker than, I guess, the inside. There's an interesting example with a muffin baking. That doesn't make sense to me, but you could probably look it up. And so that was another discovery. I'm trying to think who discovered that. Hubble and Humason, some cool guys.
So they figured out if it's expanding, it must be expanding from...
Right, expanding from a central point.
Right.
Right. And not only from a central point, but it was expanding fast from a central point. And so you put those two ideas together and you think of an explosion, right?
Right.
Center point, quick expansion. And that's kind of the theory that was proposed was... the Big Bang. Now, there's a lot of controversy about this. this theory of the beginning of the world. Most materialists, people who believe that there's nothing else in this world except for material, did not like this idea. They did not like the idea that the universe had a beginning, because then you have to ask the question, what caused the beginning?
Right.
How did that start? But there's one more discovery I want to talk about, and this really put the nail in the coffin for people who didn't want to believe in the Big Bang. And it's this idea of background radiation. So if you think of the beginning of the Big Bang, the idea goes is that at a single point in time, all of matter was condensed into a single, infinitely dense point. And if you think of all that energy and matter being condensed to a single point, there's going to be tons of heat. In fact, let's see here. They said that this book that I'm pulling from is one that we've mentioned already. Stephen Barr's Modern Faith and Ancient Physics. Modern Physics and Ancient Faith.
Excuse me.
That didn't sound right. Let's see here. I should have marked this. Oh, here we go. So... 1 second after the Big Bang, this is what they were theorizing about. Okay. 1 second after the Big Bang, for example, the density of matter was several thousand times the density of lead.
Okay.
Very dense. And the temperature was about 10 billion degrees centigrade.
It's a little cook very a muffin
hot.
Really fast.
Yeah, so that energy is so hot that if you were to see that somehow, all you would see is light. That's all you would see is extremely bright light.
Yeah.
And if that was contained within the universe, a second after the Big Bang, we should be able to see that same light in the universe around us. Now the idea is that as it expands, the wavelength of light expands as well. And if you're familiar with physics, you know that as a wavelength expands, it gets longer, it becomes unseeable to the human eye.
Right.
So this really bright light that you would have been killed by if you had seen it at the beginning of the universe should be by now a very low wavelength microwave.
Okay.
Something that we can't see. And so some guys proposed this theory and they said it should be about this much. This is what you're looking for. And it turns out that they found that background radiation.
Oh my
gosh. It's everywhere in the universe.
Yeah.
There's this background radiation that points to the fact that the Big Bang happened. And this, among the scientific community, the Big Bang is a fact. It has happened. It is scientifically provable. And so the interesting thing about the Big Bang is that, again, for most materialists, this was a very uncomfortable idea. Barr mentions that the discovery of the Big Bang was a huge win for scientists who were Jews and Christians, because what this pointed to was the beginning of a universe, which If you're familiar with the Bible, Genesis 1:1 begins by saying, "In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth." And so this sort of vindicated that belief scientifically. It was a huge paradigm shift in scientific thought. So that's kind of the background, the data side of the Big Bang. A very interesting change of thought that happened when the Big Bang was proven.
Awesome. Great. So how did that affect the different people?
So there were a lot of responses to it, as I mentioned. I was going to talk about this.
Yeah,
I'm glad you asked.
You were.
it slipped my mind. So there were a lot of responses to the Big Bang from materialists. They tried to figure out, okay, how can we get around this idea of the beginning of a universe? And so they proposed several different theories that kind of took away from that, or it changed the idea of a beginning of a universe to something else. Does that make sense?
And keep in mind that this is still historical, right? Early 1900s.
Right.
We're not claiming materialists still hold.
Right.
No one still has these thoughts.
Well, some of them are kind of appealing.
Sure.
They fall along the lines of really theoretical.
Okay.
Not really provable in the sense that the theories deal with many universes.
I see.
And the idea goes is we can observe what's going on in other universes.
Right, okay.
I.e. we can't prove it. But it could have happened.
It
could
have happened. Yes.
So the biggest one, and I think it's probably the most compelling, is the idea of the bouncing universe.
Okay.
Yeah, it's really interesting. So the idea goes that if you had an expanding universe, if we know that the scientists have calculated the rate of expansion of the universe, well, some theories go, well, what happens if that starts to slow down? What happens if the mass of the universe is too much for it to be able to escape from itself? It's going to start falling back in on itself.
Okay.
Which would be very bad for human life. And they call this idea the Big Crunch.
Oh.
So the Big Bang happens, it expands, and then it reaches this point where there's just not enough energy or whatever, and it begins to fall back in on itself, recompress into that infinitely dense, infinitely hot point.
Interesting.
And it explodes again. And then it goes back and it explodes again. And so that's kind of the idea of the bouncing universe. You kind of get the idea of something bouncing.
Okay.
And so again, there's not really a way that we could prove that because we're not... I mean, if the universe were to crunch...
If it were to start crunching around us, we might see it.
Exactly. Right. We'd be able to say, aha, but we wouldn't be around long.
Yeah.
So that's one of the propositions. There's several others out there. There's this one, there's this idea of, it's called like the blister universe.
Okay.
It's kind of strange. So there's this main universe that expands and then it reaches a normal rate of expansion. But this small patch on the universe decides to expand again.
Mm-hmm.
And so it expands, and then it reaches a normal rate of expansion. And then another one expands, and it reaches a normal rate of expansion.
Wow.
And so we're just one universe in this really long list of blisters.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's another one. And then there's another one about the idea of an eternal universe that's constantly expanding, but also... like consuming itself. I didn't really understand that one. I don't think it's very compelling. Those are different ways that's materialists, not materialists, but scientists have tried to figure out how do we make sense of the Big Bang.
Right.
They may not be trying to disprove the Big Bang.
Sure.
They're just trying to understand what happened before the Big Bang.
Right.
That's the big question people are asking.
Yes.
If the Big Bang happened, what happened before the Big Bang?
What happened before that?
Materialists have one answer. Supernaturalists have another.
Okay, great.
So all that to say, that's the Big Bang. That's the basics of the Big Bang.
Okay.
I could keep talking, but let's move on to a different aspect.
Okay, so as Seth mentioned, whenever this was first discovered, there was this paradigm shift
yeah.
in thought
Absolutely.
In the scientific community.
Absolutely.
And it
Can I say something?
Oh, yeah, sorry. Please.
So Einstein himself did not like the idea of the Big Bang.
Interesting.
He was very uncomfortable with it.
Right.
In fact, he wrote, there's a famous Catholic priest and mathematician who came out with this proof of that helped prove the idea of an expanding universe.
Hmm.
Einstein wrote a proof against his, saying, like, no, you've got it wrong. Later, Einstein admitted that he was wrong, but Einstein himself was very uncomfortable with this idea.
But that's one of the cool things about the scientific community is that it is self-correcting.
Exactly.
And so eventually, after a few years, most everyone did get on board with it.
Right.
Right. So now we've run into another problem. If we're talking specifically about science and religion.
Right.
If pretty much now everyone is in agreement with the Big Bang, from a scientific standpoint. And if, like Seth said, it was a win, I guess, if you want to put it in terms of war.
Right.
It was evidence towards a biblical account. There's some other problems with, you know, seeming problems with the biblical account looking at that. Whenever you try to paste them on top of each other, there's some sore thumbs sticking out.
Absolutely.
And so I imagine, just as Seth said, the scientific community had to kind of wrestle with these things. The religious community has had to as well.
Oh, yeah, and I would argue that the religious community is still wrestling with
Yes, absolutely. Yes, we are still in the process of it. So I wanted to bring up some of the, not interpretation is the wrong word, maybe some of the theories.
Yeah, different responses.
Responses, right, to how the Big Bang lines up with something like a biblical account.
Absolutely.
And so I'm sure there are a billion responses, but we're going to cover the four big ones that kind of have a following. And so we're going to order it from probably a little bit more staunch and more fundamental to a little bit more liberal and open-ended.
Yeah, and we're using those labels. We don't want you to... There's a lot of negativities associated with those labels.
Right.
So don't get too caught up in the labels. We're just providing you with...
These are just ideas that people have had that all have their strengths and all have their weaknesses. And so let's just dive into it.
Absolutely.
So the first one is called the Young Earth Theory.
Yep.
And so if you are... Oh, I should have said this before. If you are unfamiliar with the Genesis account, we're not going to read it. You are free to read it on your own time.
Yeah.
It is, essentially, it's that God created the earth in 6 days. God created man and animals and plants and creatures all at the same time, and leads on to the rest of the Bible through there.
Yeah.
It's a very short, you know, few chapters, a few pages at the beginning of the Bible that kind of sets the stage.
Yeah.
And so, this first response, this young earth, is adhering to the idea that when God made the earth in 6 days, those 6 days were 6 24-hour periods.
Yep.
Which puts the universe, or puts the world, excuse me, at about 10,000 years old.
Yep.
About.
Young Earth.
Young Earth, right, yes. Relatively young, 10,000 years. Much older than 24 years, but still young. So there's a couple ways that people can hold on to this and still have a, you know, scientific view about it. A few of them are something like, well, God could have created the earth already millions of years old.
Right, with the appearance of age.
With the appearance of age, right. What are some other thoughts behind that?
I heard this interestingly enough from a pastor I was talking to. And he came across this idea in a book, and the theory goes, when the Big Bang happened, the thing with the Big Bang is that not only was the universe created, but time was created. And so when you're speaking about time, it gets really tricky when the beginning of time has happened. As we know that, according to Einstein's theory of general relativity, time is a very interesting concept now. It's no longer static and unchanging.
Right.
And so there's this idea that when the universe was created, something could have happened with time. God could have, you know, there's a verse in what is it? 1 Peter, a day is like a thousand years to the Lord and a thousand years is like a day.
Yes.
And so there's some theories about how, you can squeeze that kind of time period into 24 hours.
Right.
I don't know the details. That is one theory though, that you can kind of take the Big Bang and the literal account of Genesis and work them together. It's kind of a stretch, but
sure. And so there's obviously a lot of pushback against this. Yeah. It gets messy when you look at science, when you look at geology. Like Seth said, you kind of have to bend backwards a little bit to make it work together.
Well, and one of the biggest responses I've heard is, why would God create the universe with the appearance of age when he could have just created it using the Big Bang?
Yeah, exactly.
That kind of lends itself to the idea of a God that's deceptive in a sense, and some people don't like that idea. Sure. Some people are okay with it.
Sure.
Some people are comfortable, not with the idea of God being deceptive, but just the idea of God creating things with the appearance of age.
Right.
So
right.
That's one of the common responses.
Uh-huh. So in general, that's the first response is young Earth. Let's move on to the second response. This is a very interesting one. It's called the day age theory.
Yep.
And so essentially, as we mentioned before, the biblical account says that the Earth was created in 6 days. And so some people, scholars, theologians, have said, well, maybe these 6 days aren't 24-hour periods, but maybe they are a long period of time.
Right.
Six seasons, six millennia.
Yeah. Ages.
Ages, right. Yes. And in those 6 ages, it makes it a lot easier to work in a lot of the scientific evidence that we're seeing. A lot of those unity, a lot pairing it together, it makes it a lot easier.
Right.
Do you have anything specific about that one?
Yeah. So one of the interesting things is if you read the Genesis account, on the first day God creates light, he says, "Let there be light," which is, it's an interesting idea when you consider the fact that when the universe began at the Big Bang, all that there was light. God said, "Let there be light," and there was light. And so that's, if you kind of track the process of the Big Bang, you'll see that the days line up rather nicely with how the ages would have gone. Does that make sense?
Sure.
And so that's kind of interesting in and of itself. The big problem with that is the interpretation of the word day in Genesis.
Right.
And so the Hebrew word for day is yom. And this debate, you've probably heard, this is a huge debate, the idea of what was the Genesis author saying when he said yom. All throughout the Bible, yom is interpreted as a 24-hour day.
Yeah.
Not in every situation. There are some situations where yom
it's like on that day.
Yeah, exactly.
This will happen. Yeah.
So there's a little play there, but the majority of the interpretations of the word yom is 24 hours. So that is a tough one to work around if you fall in the day age camp. Mm-hmm. You can do it, but it's not.
I've also heard a response or a counter response to this one being the ordering of some of the days are a little bit off.
Yeah.
Right. There are. I should have checked this board. There's like plants before there's water, and plants wouldn't survive without it. You know, things like that. Like if it was happening, you know, for 24 hours, a plant would be fine to live without water. But if it was an entire age without water, then well, no, that's not really a thing.
Right.
So
yeah.
There's some pushback in that regard as well.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let's move on. The third response. So we had young Earth, we have day age. This one I just learned about in the past few weeks, so Seth, you may have to help me out here a little bit.
Yeah, this one's interesting.
It's called the gap theory, or it's also known as the restoration
theory. Yeah.
And so essentially how I understand it, and feel free to jump in.
Okay.
How I understand it is there is a gap between verses 1 and 2 of Genesis chapter 1.
Yeah.
So, verse 1 being, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth.
Yep.
Gap. So, at that point...
Millions, billions of years.
Lots and lots and lots of years have happened. It's not very intuitive reading the text, because, I mean, why would there be there?
Right.
But what are some of the arguments for that?
Yeah, so, I mean, the only thing that I see the gap theory... the only thing that it really has going for itself is that it takes some confusing text that we find in Isaiah, a prophecy, a book of prophecy, and kind of incorporates them into the beginning of the universe. So in Isaiah, we find that Satan, the chief antagonist, if you will, in Christianity, is cast out of heaven. And so the idea goes that when God created the earth the first time, it was good and it was great. And then Satan was cast out of heaven. Satan went to earth and God judged the earth. And because of that, the earth became formless and void. So God judged the earth and left it there for billions and billions of years. And then when the earth was formless and void, he comes back to it and kind of recreates it. So that's kind of what it has going for it. It's able to account for some confusing texts in Isaiah, because you have to ask, well, Satan, when he fell from heaven, when was that? Uh-huh. Was that in the history of the earth? Or, and so that's what it has going for it. Other than that, it's a stretch. It's not, as you said, intuitive to read into the text.
Yeah.
In the beginning, God created the earth. Gap.
Yeah.
So, but it's interesting, and there's a lot of themes, biblical themes, that of God judging and restoring that great. Do lend it some more weight. But
cool. Let's cover this last one. Yes. So finally, this one is a little bit different than the other three. It's called the literary framework. So essentially this goes, the first three responses, were kind of having this assumption that the writer of Genesis was writing an account to help explain historically how the earth was made.
Right.
And this fourth response, literary framework, is saying that wasn't the writer's intent. That wasn't the purpose. The purpose wasn't so much how it happened, but who made it.
Yeah. And why he was doing it.
And why. Yeah. Right. And so there's some interesting arguments for this from other accounts made at the time. So like the Mesopotamian culture, one of the oldest cultures we know about. Their creation story is actually very similar in a lot of ways. It has a lot of similarities. And so this literary framework has the idea of, well, maybe this writer was just kind of writing to this culture of this is how they thought and was putting God as the author.
Right. He was writing in a way to distinguish his belief from the surroundings.
Yes, exactly. Thank you.
But he was writing it in a way that they would kind of recognize the theme. And see the difference between the Mesopotamian belief of how the world began and how the Jewish thought of the world began.
Right. And so obviously there's some pushback on this from the religious community of not taking scripture seriously enough or anything that comes along with saying, okay, well, this didn't actually happen. This is metaphorical.
Right. Yeah, that one's interesting. I personally really like that one. It, if you think about it, the culture that book was written to, I think, was concerned with a lot of different things than we were concerned with.
Right.
You know, in a modern age, we're concerned with how something came about, right? We're concerned with how did this happen? We want to know the physical processes, so on and so forth. Well, back then, they were much less concerned with how it happened and more concerned with why it happened. Mm-hmm. And so when you approach the Genesis text with that idea of this was written to answer the why, a lot of interesting ideas kind of surface when you structure it literarily, not literally.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's an interesting idea. There's a lot of pushback, as you said, because people say, if you can't take Genesis seriously, how are you going to take the rest of the Bible?
Right.
Or are you saying that Genesis isn't history? Where do you draw the line between the metaphorical nature of Genesis 1, 2, and 3 and the rest of Genesis?
Yeah.
So that's some of the pushback there.
Yeah. So we just have a couple minutes left, and before we end, I just wanted to talk about why does all this matter? Today maybe have been a little bit Bible heavy, but I think it's important to talk about this stuff and hear out where people stand in this conversation. So why, so Seth, why does it even matter that we're having this discussion?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think this is interesting because just coming off of the literary framework, it is very important, aside from religion, just in general life, to know your purpose, to know why you are here.
Sure.
If you don't have a purpose in life, if you're wandering around going from job to job, that's not a good way to live a purposeless life.
Okay.
And so what I personally appreciate about these discussions is they get to the heart of why we are here. This is one of the biggest questions that have plagued humanity since they've been able to think for themselves, right? Why are we here? What are we doing? How did we get here? You know? And if you are able to grapple with these tough ideas and understanding why we got here, how we got here, I think that lends insight into your purpose in life.
Okay.
So that's my personal thoughts. What do you think?
I just think this is, kind of like what we talked about last week with justified beliefs of just having reasons to know why you believe what you believe. There's value in that itself. And that is something that it will never benefit to you to just something. Oh, I'm not sure about something. Okay. Let me never think about it or bring it up ever again. Yeah, you know, that's an excellent point. That's not good. And so from one point of view, no, it doesn't really matter, because if Seth is a gap theory guy and I'm a day age guy, okay, cool. You know, it doesn't, likely it's not going to affect the way that we interact with people or with policies or whatever. Like Seth said, it bringing this up, it really shifted a lot of thinking.
Yeah.
And it really created a problem for everyone, like we talked about, a problem for non-theists and a problem for theists. So this is something that is worth your time to consider and say, this is what I believe and why.
Yeah, absolutely. I just want to reiterate that. That's an excellent point. It comes across as very poor taste when someone asks you, why do you believe what you believe? And you just say, because.
Yeah.
That's not really a great reason why you should believe what you believe. And so we bring this up to hopefully get you thinking, why do I believe that the earth was created in six literal days? Or why do I believe that the earth was created via the Big Bang? We want to get you thinking, and that's kind of the heart behind this podcast. We've mentioned this multiple times.
Absolutely.
We want to get you thinking as to why you believe what you believe, so that you can work through it and be a better person for it. So.
Okay, great. Well, thank you everyone for tuning in.
Yep.
Next time we will bring on a guest speaker. We're going to kind of continue this conversation a little bit further and maybe dive in deeper to some of these topics.
Yep.
So can't wait to see you then.
See you guys.